across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet, by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Return of the Unexplained. Thank you for coming back to my show. Thank you very much for the lovely emails that I've had lately, many of those from North America, also from the UK. Love to hear from you. Thank you for your guest suggestions, some really, really intriguing ones as well, and I'm on to all of them. Life over this side of the pond continues quite tough. Work very hard. I don't know if you find this yourself in your life, but it seems to me that jobs these days, work of every sort, demands 3, 4, 5 times as much as it used to. And I'm finding that too. I have little time other than to go to work, eat, go to bed, and get some sleep from time to time. That's about my life right now. But I'm determined to keep The Unexplained going. This is my labor of love, and I want to develop this show, and I'm going to as well, whatever. So thank you for your support. Thank you very much for the donations. Please keep those coming. Go to www.theunexplained.tv, and there you'll find a link to send me email with guest suggestions or thoughts about the show or a donation. If you want to make one, you can make one there. And thank you again to Adam Cornwell at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for his help designing the website and getting the show out to you. And on that subject, we've had some problems with iTunes lately, especially with Edition 76. A lot of you saying that you cannot see it on iTunes. It is not there. Well, this problem we've had before, and it seems to be at their end somehow. So if you have a problem with editions of this show, number one, the show will always be on the website, www.theunexplained.tv. Number two, if you want to get it through iTunes, let me know if there's a problem, but also please let them know. It's important that they know there is a big and real demand for this show, and then maybe they will sort the problem out that we've had getting the show to you on iTunes in the past. You know, normally everything works fine. For some reason, there've been a few glitches down the last few months, so we need to get those sorted out so we can keep on this work. Thank you very much for everything that you've said in the emails, and thank you to Martin for the theme tune. Martin, please get in touch. Would love to hear from you. And that's about it, really. That's how life is here. We've got a very early spring. I'm recording these words at the very start of March, and it looks like we skipped here in the UK from winter and ice and clear skies into springtime in the space of about 5 days. You know, if you live in the UK, you know what I'm talking about. We went from temperatures sub-zero, minus 10 Celsius, up to 16, 17, 18 in no time at all. Not only do people not know what to wear, nature is confused. A lot of the spring flowers are now blooming around me here at home, and the animals and birds are really happy because they think it's springtime. Very, very weird. Now, the man we've got on for you this time is a man who suggested himself for the show. He's a kind of friend of a friend, really. He knows somebody that I interviewed before on The Unexplained, Micah Hanks. This man's name is Thomas P. Fusco, and he has something that I've been looking for years. Maybe you have too. It is a comprehensive one-stop shop theory of everything. It links every supernatural phenomena, UFOs, the whole nine yards, and the human psyche. He says in a very long publicity handout for this book that he's written, I believe that the theory of supergeometry presented in my new book, Behind the Cosmic Veil, A New Vision of Reality, Merging Science, the Spiritual, and the Supernatural, has finally uncovered the long-coveted unifying concept. In other words, everything, as I've suspected, and you might have suspected for years, is linked. How well does he pull this off? Let's find out. Let's cross to the United States now, to Thomas P. Fusco. Thomas, thank you for coming on The Unexplained.
Thanks for having me, Howard.
Now, listen, I'm very, very pleased. It's taken us a few weeks to set this thing up, but I'm delighted now to be able to do this. Now, all I know about you is that you're based on the East Coast, USA. Whereabouts?
I'm down here in North Central Florida in a city called Ocala.
I know Ocala. I've been there. It is a great place. I know you. To get to Ocala, you have to fly into Orlando, don't you?
Yes, yeah. That's true. Yeah. And it is beautiful out here, but what I tell people is BYOM, bring your own money.
Go on, explain.
Well, in the best of times, this has always been a depressed economy around here. And the way it is now, it's been pretty rough. But, you know, we hang in there and do the best we can and enjoy the sunshine in between.
I can't believe that you're in Ocala, because I have a very good friend whose parents live in a place called The Villages, which I don't think are too far away from you.
Oh, you're exactly right. And the Villages is a retirement community.
That's right.
And I believe it was, I can't remember how many years ago, it hasn't been too long, that it got so large that the post office finally decided its own zip code.
Really? Well, it is a huge place. I mean, people in the UK can't appreciate this. I know there are some Brits who live in this complex. But this thing is a retirement complex of very large and very luxurious homes in many cases that stretches for mile upon mile upon mile. This place has got lakes. It's got its own shops and entertainment complexes, its own golf course. It is completely self-contained and safe.
You're absolutely correct, and there are they provide a variety of different housings at quite a few different price ranges. So most people could get into it if they wanted to.
Well, hey, listen, we should be on a percentage for that. All right, Tom.
I'm just hoping I make it that long, you know.
Me too. That's you and I together. All right, Tom. Well, listen, a pleasure to talk with you. Now, you suggested yourself to come on this show because you're kind of a friend of a mutual friend, Micah Hanks, who was on this show, and he was one of my favorite guests about 6 or 8 shows ago. But I don't know much about you. Tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm an independent researcher. I've spent close to 3 decades researching the causes behind supernatural and paranormal phenomena. But doing so in a way that it would have to maintain a consistency with established scientific and physical observations. It would also have to be a type of a model that would accommodate not merely one or two aspects of reality, but the entire realm. And that's quite a mouthful to bite off. Micah Hanks was extremely impressed with my work. He used words like brilliant and enthralling, God bless his little heart. But I really have come up with something very different, particularly in the fields of what I call paranormal mechanics.
Well, what we've all been looking for, I suspect, those who are honest with ourselves, you know, is one theory that unifies everything, and it's eluded most of us. It's even an awful big headache for a lot of us to even think about, and this is what you say that you've more or less come up with.
Yes, and, you know, to be honest and fair, what I consider myself having come up with is likened to Da Vinci's drawings and sketches of modern devices like aircraft and tanks and submarines and those kinds of things. In other words, I don't have every single minutia, but what I've been able to lay down is a basic conceptual model that really allows us to understand a lot of these things, not only in new and unique ways, but it actually takes the form of a scientific theory in that for the first time, a model like this makes physical predictions that can be experimentally tested.
That's a hell of a claim. You need to go into that somewhat. How is that possible?
Well, there's a couple of premises, foundational, what I would call paradigms or conceptual models that allow us to look at things in a different way. Some of the greatest scientific discoveries have been made by people who just simply looked at things in a different way than anyone else had before. So one of the steps to this was to come up with a scientifically consistent and reasonable explanation for what constitutes the paranormal. We can't begin to analyze what a thing is until we can somehow narrow it down and define it. And so for me, the definition that I've given the supernatural or the paranormal is any physical effect that is observable, that interacts with its physical environment, but has no direct local physical cause connected to it.
All right, well, we had an example of something a little bit like that a few shows ago. We talked about a very famous British poltergeist case called the Enfield poltergeist, probably the most famous one. It was a big case in the 1970s. That would seem to be a prime candidate for your theory.
Absolutely. You know, for example, the example that I give is, let's say, something like a disembodied voice. Now, here is a phenomena that is physically observable. We can hear it. It's an effect. It interacts with its environment. Otherwise, it couldn't disturb the air molecules in a way to vibrate them to the amplitude and frequency so that you could hear a voice. All of the vocal parts of that phenomena are absolutely normal and perfectly understandable by established physics. But the difference is, in a normal voice, we have a physical local cause connected to the effect, which is our vocal cords. And in a disembodied voice, we don't have that local physical cause that's in the exact same vicinity as the effect and is connected to it.
So that's where you have to bridge a gap, isn't it? And how do you bridge that gap between me speaking now with my vocal cords and something out there making sounds with something else?
Well, here's the unique part of it, and this is the second aspect of what I call a new paradigm. One of the things that I did was I spent a lot of time, Howard, looking at established physics. And there was one aspect of it that kept coming up over and over and over again as a problem. And this was the what we call the force of gravity. Now, it's kind of funny to say, well, how does gravity relate with the supernatural? And the answer to that is that when you look very deeply into gravity, not just the things that we were, taught in grammar school or high school, we find that the only thing that we really know about gravity is its effect. What we were taught about in school in gravity all has to do with gravitational effect. As far as the actual substance of gravity itself, it not only remains a mystery, but it is also the stumbling block in virtually every single effort to come up with a scientific theory of everything.
Right. So you're saying that's fascinating, that because gravity is something that we can demonstrate, of course, I mean, I can throw, I'm not going to do it right now, but I could throw my cup of coffee up into the air and it would land on the ground in a set period of time. Of course it would, because of the effect of gravity. And we can't see gravity, but we know what it is. So if you apply the same principle to everything else, you've got a theory.
In a sense, yes. But there's a very important key to gravity. And just to, to give your audience just a real brief background of this, when Einstein was working on his famous unified field equation, which he was never able to successfully complete, and that model, actually, that concept gave rise to a lot of the elements of his theories of relativity. The problem that he kept coming up with is that he could not express gravity mathematically within the three dimensions of space and the one dimension of time. In the modern time, actually since his time, the two major systems by which we currently define physical reality, which is relativity and quantum mechanics, the thing that has always prevented them from being reconciled into one system is gravity. When we look at the standard model of the universe, which is what physics uses today, capital S, capital M, which describes all the particles, forces, and their interactions, what most people are not aware of is that there is no expression in the standard model for gravity. And you get to another aspect of it. We've been searching for decades for a particle of gravity called a graviton. For gravity to actually be a physical force and have a mystery or a material explanation, a completely physical explanation, we have to have a particle that conveys that force, that propagates itself in as a wave. We've discovered that in electromagnetism. We know the other two forces, how they work, the strong and weak nuclear forces. But gravity has never been demonstrated to be a physical force, even though we theorize that it is. And one other element that's very important is that in recent decades, astrophysicists have discovered that there's about 90% more observable gravity in the universe than there is physical mass to explain it. This is where the idea of dark matter came up, where they just simply made up this imaginary physical substance that would explain where all this additional gravity would come from. And yet we have not a stitch of evidence to show that such a thing as dark matter even exists.
So that's what they call a paradigm. That's an explanation that fits in the light of what you know and can know for now.
Exactly. And this is one of the problems that's been facing modern physics, is that in centuries past, Howard, when we observed effects and when we tried to determine causes, we have always been able to come up with a physical or material cause to explain the effect that we're observing. But again, over the last couple of decades, what physicists have run into is that we have literally run out of material to explain all the physical observations that we make. And so consequently, this is starting to sound very, very much like a paranormal phenomena when you look at it this way.
So if things that we regard as natural are paranormal, then the paranormal suddenly fits the explanation.
In a sense, you're on the right track. My approach, essentially, once we give the paranormal a scientifically consistent explanation and not this metaphysical idea where anything that's weird or unusual gets thrown into it, then we can begin to expand. And for example, we can take a look at certain aspects of quantum physics. And based on our definition, rather than the traditional way of using quantum physics to try to explain the paranormal, we can just simply conclude in this new paradigm that quantum physics is, in itself, a paranormal phenomenon.
Okay, and where do we go from there?
Well, the gravity aspect of it is what provided the key. When we look at the idea of all this gravitational lensing in space, and I'm assuming most of the audience is aware of the idea that Einstein put forth and was proved that gravity is associated with the bending or the curving of space. But when we look out into these vast expanses of the universe and we see all of this bending of space, what they call gravitational lensing, with no adjacent physical mass to it, then if we just accept for what we see it as, instead of trying to shoehorn it into an old paradigm, a material paradigm, we see that we have a physical effect that interacts with its environment with no physical direct cause connected to it. Now, if we take that assumption, if we take that hypothesis and take it a step further, in other words, what I've done was I've taken that effect of a bending of space and I've taken it inside of a haunted house, for example, and say, okay, we observe these bendings in space out and out in the universe, but they're all in a vacuum. What would happen if we took that and actually put it in a local house that had physical matter around it, all in every place, building materials, most commonly air molecules, what kind of effect this would have? And this is where it gets very, very interesting, Howard. The first thing that would happen, picture in your mind that a bubble in space-time would begin to expand inside of a haunted house, that suddenly the space would begin to bend, for now we'll say in the form of like a sphere or a ball. What kind of effect this would have? The first thing it would do, Howard, it would twist and compress the space that's directly surrounding and at the outer edge of this expanding bubble. We know that the curvatures of space-time do this. But if it's in the presence of matter, like air molecules, one of the things this would do, it would excite mechanically the electrons inside of the atoms that comprise the air. And that would cause those electrons to jump into their higher orbits or valences. This is an established scientific principle. And one of the things that would be the result of that excitation would be we would register an electromagnetic field. And so the first thing that we see is that this kind of a phenomena would produce what we observe in haunted houses, which is an electromagnetic field that essentially appears out of thin air. And this model would explain, yes, electromagnetic field is coming directly out of the thin air, so to speak.
And if you look at ghost hunters, among their equipment, apart from the microphones and everything else, they have those meters to measure those fields. So is what you're saying, Tom, and I want to make it very clear, that the way this works alters our perception of reality in a particular way?
Absolutely. If you think, for example, Howard, let's say several thousand years ago, and actually maybe not all that long ago, but for argument's sake, when the ancients looked up in the sky, what they saw was the Aristotelian model of a crystalline sphere. And that there were, a lot of them felt that there were holes that were poked into that shell. And it rotated in some way so that during the day we would see the sun, and at night we would see the light from the sun shining through these little holes. And that's what the stars were. And imagine today if you took one of those ancients and brought him into modern times and explained to him exactly what he was looking at, the completely different paradigm of what we understand today, I would imagine that some of those people would simply pass out. Their idea of what the universe was or is would be so different, even though their physical eyes are looking at the exact same thing and seeing the exact same image as it always did.
Mind-blowing. How does this theory, though, fit things like UFOs? Because you say it does.
Well, yes, it does. And what I have to do is, what I'd like to do is go a little bit further with talking about the different phenomena in a haunted house.
Okay.
Because once we get that understood, then we can begin to relate it with other anomalies.
Got it.
Now, I talked about the electrons being excited and moving up into the higher orbits. Now, when electrons expend this kind of mechanical excitement, one of the things that they do, of course, they drop back down to their original orbits or valences around the nucleus. But when they do that, they tend to give off under certain circumstances two different things. One of the things that electrons can emit are photons. And photons, of course, are particles of light. So electrons dropping back to their lower orbits and giving off photons is a luminous effect. We see it around us in our modern age all the time. We take an electromagnetic field. We pass it through a certain type of material to excite the electrons. When the electrons drop back down, they give off photons. And this is how a light-emitting diode works. And so LEDs work on the exact same principle. Now, so far, if someone has been following visually what I'm describing with this ball expanding and giving off these photons on the outer perimeter, I've just described what paranormal investigators call a luminous orb.
Okay.
This is exactly what they look like and exactly how they behave. They're also jacketed with a field of electromagnetism. So this is a second phenomenon that would be explained by this model. The third one, out of many, but the third one in the line is that another thing that these electrons can give off under these circumstances is thermal energy. They can give off heat. Now, it's interesting in recent years that some paranormal investigators have been bringing into the sites of activity these thermal imaging cameras, and some of them have picked up some incredible paranormal images, some being very detailed, like a normal full-bodied apparition. But when you study these images, Howard, what you find out, and this is kind of thing when you're looking at something, as I said, like if you were looking at the night sky with the old paradigm and the new paradigm, if you look at these images with this different paradigm, you notice immediately that unlike living beings, where the image would be very varied, where you would have white hot spots and you know, cold blue spots at the tips of the nose and the ears, and the clothing would be much darker. These paranormal images have a more or less uniform signature over their entire surface, no matter what kinds of structural details these images display. And therefore, that's the evidence that whatever mechanism is creating the thermal energy that's recorded by the camera is uniform. It's the exact same mechanism functioning at the exact same level over the entire surface of the apparition. And so this is exactly what we see in these images.
Tom, do you think that, you know, let's take the example of ghosts and apparitions. You're saying that what they are is created by this phenomenon. Could it be that some supernatural element or force or being or something like that is simply using this that you've discovered, that you've unearthed, as a medium to transmit images and forms and shapes and strange things? If you understand what I'm saying, they're using it as a way of doing it because they know that that is what exists within our reality. Could that be?
Absolutely, Howard. And not only does my model explain how that could be so, but it provides that missing link. It's exactly what you're talking about. I talk about, I try to compare it to, let's say, a crime scene where someone was murdered by a gun. And, you know, if we compare that to hauntings, people would say, well, the ghost is the perpetrator. And that's very well and good. But the problem is just putting the perpetrator at the scene of the crime, so to speak, doesn't tell us how that perpetrator put a hole in that victim's body to kill him. Mm. And so what I've described is the actual gun, the actual mechanism that is between the perpetrator and the crime.
But what it doesn't describe is intent, I think you would call it.
Yes. As far as intent, that's something which falls into the realm of what I call criminology, which is the idea of trying to figure out who did it and why. Unfortunately, in the field of the paranormal, everybody's a criminologist, and we've got very, very, very few forensics examiners. So I concentrate on the forensics, and I want to know how it happens. As far as who done it and why, what I can provide with those criminologists that are involved with that, if they say, look, I think this might be Dead Aunt Mary communicating, trying to communicate with the living, I can present them with the forensics and say, according to the physical forensics of the crime scene, so to speak, that theory is viable. You see what I mean?
So in other words, if you hear music on the radio, you can work out that somebody's got a transmitter and they're transmitting on AM or FM. That you can do. Similarly with this, you're aware of a phenomenon. Well, you know that they're using this force, for want of a better word, in order to get that phenomenon to impact upon you in your reality.
Yes, exactly. And the superphysical bending of space that I'm talking about, superphysical meaning that physicist Theodore Calusa theorized, that the bending of space actually originates from outside of space-time. Taking that particular model and also taking another theoretical aspect that's been talked about for centuries, which is what I call a collection of coherent information that describes and determines physical reality but resides and is stored outside of physical reality. What Plato called his forms, Freud called them psychoid entities. They've been called cosmic consciousness, universal mind. David Bohm, the one of the most prominent physicists of the 20th century called it implicate order.
This stuff has baffled people for years, for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. I mean, the Plato theories, I had to study them at university, and they used to give me headaches trying to understand his idea of forms and the allegory of the cave and the shapes and all the rest of it. I found it really hard. This stuff is at the very cutting edge, really.
Yes. What the difference with this is that for the first time, we have a model in which we could see how this extra-physical collection of information could actually trickle down to the speed of light and below, and with it has a vibrational substance, which I also talk about in my book, that would bend the fabric of space-time down past the level of light speed, and then this information would trickle down into this depression and begin to materialize.
So it's like using an electricity transformer, or is that too simplistic a way of putting it? You know, you're trying to transform 240 volts British into 110 AC American.
Well, no, it's not so much that. If you would picture, if you had a thin rubber membrane, let's say stretched across a frame, and it was so thin it was transparent, you almost couldn't even see it. And if you took an object, let's say like a coin, and you pressed it from the one side into the other side, you know, into the fabric, someone standing on the other side would see a couple things. They would see the exact details of everything about the features on that coin. They would see it literally materialize, and it would be surrounded by a depression in space-time, so that we would actually see a coin materialize. And then if that coin was pulled back, we would see that depression in space-time collapse, and the coin would dematerialize.
What a fantastic way of putting it. That absolutely explains it in a way that I can understand. But of course, we're still no nearer of knowing what it is that pushes the coin.
Exactly, yes. That's the criminology end of it. And I have my own personal ideas. All I could tell you for certain is that this model gives us a means by which these things could come to pass, and how coherent collections of information that operate in a unity, so to speak, in an intelligent manner could definitely purposefully do these kinds of things.
So it's like wartime, really. In World War II, the British and the Americans captured a certain number of German submarines. They weren't quite sure about the technology they had, but they had the finished product, the submarine, and they worked back how they were able to get the results that they got. Through your theory, you're saying that here's a theory that can take us back. We can back-engineer it. And eventually, somebody really clever is going to be able to work out where this stuff comes from.
Yes, absolutely. What we're stuck in is a situation where we have to make physical measurements and observations, because the physical realm is the only thing we really have to tangibly work with. And then once we come up with all those observations, we can find those that don't have a material explanation, and then come up with a system which most perfectly and consistently answers all the questions that arise from these observations.
But for this thing to reach its ultimate end, for us to start understanding more about what is producing these phenomena, it means that scientists, who tend to poo-poo a lot of these things a lot of the time, have got to start thinking in a completely different way, doesn't it?
Well, yes, and I think that we're reaching that point to where, as I said, physicists have come to the point in that science that they've literally run out of material to provide a physical material explanation for all observations in the universe. I wanted to say a little bit more about this bubble of space, if I can.
Go ahead.
In this haunted house, because this is where it really gets fascinating. Up until this point, I've been talking about the outer edge of this expanding bubble. But if we have a ball that's expanding like that, we also have an interior. And there's some very different things that are going on inside of it. that provides a lot of different clues as to what happens in a paranormal event. If this bubble opened up in the presence of matter, not like they do in space, but in a haunted house, what we would conclude or what we would understand would happen is that for a temporary period of time, there would be a vacuum that's devoid of thermal energy and material in the middle of that ball. Now, if it opened up very, very slowly and gradually, the laws of equilibrium would allow the surrounding materials and thermal energy to flow into the interior of that expanding bubble to reach an equilibrium. And so we would notice hardly any variation whatsoever in the surrounding areas. But if it opened up quickly, Howard, it would be very much like walking, you know, from your living room up to your front door on a very cold winter's day and opening it up very quickly. And what we would have temporarily, we would feel a vacuum, we would feel a vast difference in temperature, we would get a difference in barometric readings. And so this is what we actually observe in haunted houses. So for example, they detect on occasion these cold spots, and they don't last for long. This is exactly what an expanding bubble of space-time would cause inside of a house.
And anybody who's been to a place that's reputed to be haunted, and I have been to several in my lifetime, in fact, I even worked in one, can describe exactly what that feels like, that cold, dead, absolutely still feeling that just is not from this world. It doesn't feel like it's from here. It's not like going to a place that's cold. It's a feeling that's unique.
Yes, it's like an absence of normal reality. And that's exactly what it would cause. The other thing it would do, Howard, is, again, by the same mechanical model, it would explain how we get mystery breezes, where people feel a sudden rush of air, where there's no windows or doors open. And then there's another aspect of it even still, that is remarkable, in that I've listened to many different investigators tell me about this feeling of heaviness that they get at the onset of paranormal phenomena. And it's one of these kinds of sensations that it isn't like ambiguous or subjective, where 10 different people will give you 6 different descriptions. It's like 99 out of 100 people will use that exact same word, heavy. And we human beings all know what that word means. We've learned it in our everyday lives. So when everybody's saying it feels heavy, you have to kind of take it to the bank and say, well, that's exactly what it is. Now, here's the interesting thing. Is an expanding bubble of space-time or an entire area of space-time beginning to warp, one of the things that would produce is a gravitational field. And so the feelings of heaviness that people are reporting, according to this model, are literally true.
What about groups of people who sometimes have a dynamic of their own? I'm going to tell a story to you now that I've never told on the radio or anywhere else. My family know it, and that's about it. And it happened a good 2 decades ago when I was just a student broadcaster. And I'm not going to name any names here, but somebody who is now quite well known, I went to a house where there were a bunch of other people who were all interested in these psychic things. And it was all very new to me then. And we sat on a sofa and on chairs in this ordinary room in an ordinary house. And it was becoming dusk. And it was springtime, so it wasn't cold. And the ones who were more psychically aware then said, I think something's going to develop here. Well, you know, I didn't know much about any of this stuff then. I was all terribly, as I say, new to it. And in that room, which was in a place called Southport, which is near Liverpool, England, there was exactly what you describe, a heaviness. The temperature at waist sort of level dropped. It was almost as if there was a carpet of mist in that room. And I don't understand what happened, but I feel that the group of people working as a dynamic together made that occur. And I felt if we'd stayed there and we stopped it, if we'd stayed there, something from somewhere might have appeared. Now, I've never really understood what that was, and it's 20 years ago now or more, but what you've just been talking about sounds like how that felt, if you know what I'm saying, Tom.
Yes, absolutely. This is what's been so incredible about this model, because people in the field everywhere are getting gestalts and light bulbs from it. When I described that sphere that was opening up and standing there, I've already had on two different interviews that were hosted by investigative teams. I've already had two different hosts pretty much almost gasp and say, what you just described is what we call a spiritual vortex, a doorway between here and the other side. And I said, yeah, you get a little star on your paper. That's exactly what this is.
Well, this thing that happened to me was almost as much as it seemed to me that I was quite young, and these people were all much more experienced in these things. And they kind of realized, I think, but I never asked them, I've never even met them since then, they kind of sensed that some kind of portal or door or something was opening up. And they felt, I sensed, and I don't think I'm wrong even all these years later, that what it was going to scare the hell out of me. And that's why they stopped it.
Yes. Yeah. Now, let's talk about another paradigm real quick that also relates to what the account that you're telling me. We have to observe something very unique about we as human beings, and this has never quite been looked at in this way before, but what we do, let's say that the telephone I'm holding, the computer that people might be listening over, these things cannot occur in nature. You could take, I don't care how long till the end of time, what I tell people, you could put a turkey in the oven, and you could wait for 10 zillion years. It doesn't matter how long. And when you open it up, it's not going to be a Volkswagen engine. It's still going to be a turkey. Certain things just are not able to happen in nature. And we human beings do this all the time. We take invisible information and we materialize it in the physical world in a way that doesn't occur in nature. Therefore, we have a supernatural effect on the surrounding world around us. There is something in our brains that is built according to the same principles and laws that created the universe in which that brain is a subset. No subset of a system, Howard, can work in a way that's contrary to or outside of the laws and principles that determine the system in which that subset is a member. So our human brains work in the very same way that created the universe itself. And therefore, yes, we do have a direct effect at times on our surrounding physical environment and can actually bring about some of these effects ourselves, as in like telepathy or telekinesis, mind over matter.
And are some people better at this than others? They must be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, some people can see like eagles and other people are colorblind. Some of that just simply has to do with the aptitudes for each individual. My wife is an artist. She can draw things that look just like a photograph. And I have trouble doing the stick guy on the hangman.
That you and me together, I can take photographs, but I cannot draw.
Mm-hmm. So we all have different aptitudes. That's something that we've observed over centuries. So that aspect where some people are more adept or sensitive to certain things, I don't consider that part of the paranormal at all. I just consider it as human variation.
Maybe we're ready to go here now. What about UFOs? How do they tie in?
Well, if you'll notice about UFOs, they observe or they display the same kind of characteristic behaviors often of what we see in haunted houses. So, for example, if we use that same idea of a rubber membrane and we put like a real heavy baseball on it, we would see the baseball sink down in the rubber, the space would curve around it. Under normal propulsion or movement, we would take our hand and move it across the rubber, and we would see the physical engine, so to speak, the propulsion unit of our hand driving this thing. But let's say, for example, we were able to manipulate space from the other time and kind of pinch the rubber in front of the ball and pull it down to create a pocket of space. Well, the ball would roll right into it, and yet there would be no visible means of propulsion, no sound of an engine, nothing at all. It would roll all by itself, just like we see UFOs do, just like we see poltergeist levitations happen in haunted houses. Exact same mechanics.
Could we be bringing these phenomena to ourselves? Could we be willing them here?
Well, there's certainly, again, because we are willful and intelligent, we have free will and we have an intelligence that we can command with that free will. And the qualities of our makeup allow us to use that to directly affect the physical face of reality. Absolutely, that's within our powers to do anything like that.
What would you say to people who might send me emails, because I've got a very good dialogue with my listeners and they give me very, very honest feedback? If they say to me, "This Tom Fusco, very, very interesting stuff, but who is he? I mean, he's no scientist. What does he know?" What would you say to them?
What I would say to them is that Thomas Edison, who didn't even have a high school education, he was basically an uneducated man. When he displayed his talking machine, his gramophone, in front of the Paris Academy of Sciences, they universally denounced it as a trick of ventriloquism based on the fact that Edison didn't have a degree. So what I would tell these people is this. Don't attack the messenger. Don't think that you're going to get over by attacking the messenger or his methods. Be honest, be sincere, be genuine and truthful, and look at my work. Appraise my work on its own merits.
Seems to me that what you've done, more than anything else, is come up with a different way of thinking. And sometimes evolving the different way of thinking about things we know about is almost more important than the eventual discoveries of whatever is found out by science, if you see what I'm saying, if you follow this logic, that it's the thought process that's got to change first. And you've started a journey here. I'm just wondering, where do you go next in that journey? What's the next step?
Well, the next step is I'm collaborating with an engineer who's pretty much finished his doctorate in physics named David Roundtree. And he is an engineer that has conducted some very interesting experiments that have actually validated a number of key physical predictions that my theory makes, among which is at the site of paranormal phenomena, we would have a fluctuation in barometric pressure and temperature. We would also have time distortion. And we would also have a gravitational fluctuation in three dimensions, not just linear like the Earth's gravity, and we would also be able to pick up EVPs inside of a vacuum because the fabric of space-time would be giving off an electromagnetic magnetic oscillation just like the fabric of a speaker. And he has already confirmed every one of these predictions experimentally. And we're collaborating together, and hopefully we're going to be able to publish a paper in the not-too-distant future that may usher in what they call new physics.
You talked about distortions in time. That, of course, brings us to a subject that fascinates all of us, if we're being really honest with ourselves, certainly fascinates me. Time travel, moving in time.
Yes. Well, think about an apparition. Let's say we have an apparition of a 19th century Victorian lady. I always like to talk about them. Here we have a visible manifestation of something that is so detailed that we can actually identify the period of dress that the woman is wearing. We can see that she's a woman. We can sometimes even see very minute details in her face. All of these geometric structures that are sensible and recognizable to us, which is why I say they don't come from an alternate universe. That's another story. But this information is actually materializing in front of our eyes that was formed and determined 150 years ago. So within our realm of space-time, this woman traveling through time to our particular coordinate in time is not possible. But if her information receded out of space-time like that quarter, that I was talking about that you pull back and was able to be placed back into space-time in the future, that would be how time travel would be affected. We're actually witnessing time travel of information when we see apparitions.
You've only just started this work. It is fascinating. And for me, the thing that I'm going to go away with is the different way of thinking about things. More than anything else, the different way of conception of the things that we know and understand and have read about. And that to me, is the most important thing to come out of our conversation. I'm amazed by what you say. Do you find that the scientific community, apart from this guy you're collaborating with, do they take you seriously? Do they listen to what you have to say, or are you not at that stage yet?
Well, I've had a few encounters of that nature. I would say that the vast majority of people are open to this idea, especially the idea that I propose that it's not mass that bends the curvatures of space. It's the curvatures of space in which mass forms, which would explain a lot of problems that we have in physics today. But the ones that give me the most grief and heartache are what Einstein called the fanatical atheists. These are the people that cannot handle any kind of a concept that would explain reality in any way that existed outside of the four dimensions of space and time. They vehemently attack me. And they never address my work, Howard. All they do is try to attack the messenger and his methods. They never address directly my work. And the other side, the second faction that I received the most resistance from, is the fanatically religious. And by that, I don't mean the fanatically spiritual. I mean the fanatically religious.
Because presumably, if your theory fits all these other things right off the shelf, it would also fit religion. And that's going to challenge some people's beliefs, and they won't like that.
Part of this model is actually taken from a cosmology that's been hiding in the Bible for centuries in plain sight. The other faction that vehemently opposes me are those who have their pet theories already, like the multiverse, and that my theory just simply shows that those other theories don't hold weight and pretty much dissolve under even the most rudimentary scrutiny. And they're also the ones, again, they won't confront my work. They always attack me personally.
Sounds like you're not bothered by any of that.
Well, you know, I consider myself as being the only human being on Earth who's able to tell this story right now. And by golly, I'm going to tell it. I don't care what anybody says.
I'm delighted, very, very pleased that we had the chance. There were a couple of stumbling blocks along the way. We weren't able to fix a date for this conversation, and eventually we got it together. And I'm really, really pleased. You exceeded expectations in every way, Tom Fusco, and I'm delighted to have talked with you. Do give my regards to Ocala. I miss that place.
Oh, my, I will. And I just want everybody to know that all the information about the book can be gotten at www.cosmicveil, spelled V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com. And there's also an email address that you can contact me at there, and I answer all my emails.
You happy to give that out?
Yes.
All right, what is it?
Oh, it's contact@cosmicveil.com.
Okay, or you can follow the link from my website, www.theunexplained.tv, and it'll take you right there. Tom, delighted to have talked to you, as I say, and I hope that we talk again the next time you come out with your next work, which presumably are you working on right now?
Well, right now, again, like I said, I'm working on collaborating with David Roundtree, and the other book that I'm starting to put together is called The Multiverse Conspiracy, and other plots by modern science to destroy everything spiritual.
I love it. Let's talk again. Tom Fusco, thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you.
The thoughts of Thomas P. Fusco, and his book is called Behind the Cosmic Veil. You can find out more about him and it by going to his website, and that is Cosmic Veil, V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com. Just follow the link actually through this website, which is www.theunexplained.tv. Thank you very much for being with me on this journey that we've called The Unexplained, that's been going now for more than 5 years. Through the radio show and through what we've done online for all these years, I couldn't have done any of it without your support. And I feel that I'm only just at the beginning of this journey. I want to do so much more. And all I need really is the support from you. Let me know that this is valuable to you. Help me to improve it. Tell me what you like about it. Tell me what you don't. Send me guest suggestions because I do work on them. But above all, it's wonderful to know that you are there and part of this. And, you know, I'm very sincere when I say I want to develop this because I want it to be really good. That's the only standard by which any of us can be measured. Good, I think. And excellent is best. That sounds kind of obvious, doesn't it, really? But you know what I'm saying. I aim for excellence in everything that I do. I'm one of those people. Thank you very much. Thank you to Adam Cornwell, another person who has excellence as his standard too, at Creative Hotspot in Liverpool for getting the show out to you and designing the website. Thank you to Martin for the theme tune. And above all else, thank you to you for being part of The Unexplained. See you soon.